Hello and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. In today's episode, we spoke with Sanjeev Agrawal, the President and Chief Operating Officer of LeanTOS, a healthcare technology company based in California. LeanTOS works with hospitals to help them unlock their capacity to serve more patients and manage staff better. He says hospitals need to understand that efficiency is not just a luxury anymore, and health systems are going to need to turn to technology in order to survive. Join us for a fascinating conversation. Well, thank you for joining us today. We are talking with Sanjeev Agrawal, the President and Chief Operating Officer of LeanTOS, a company that develops software solutions to help hospitals unlock some of their capacity. So Sanjeev, thanks so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Ron.
Why don't we talk a little bit about your company for those who may not be as familiar with LeanTOS? Could you just maybe give an overview of the services your company offers?
Absolutely. So think about LeanTOS as a company that helps hospitals optimize the use of constrained capacity. So if you think about 5,000 hospitals in this country who have invested anywhere between $200 million to $500 million, sometimes more, in fixed assets, operating rooms, inpatient capacity, chemotherapy chairs, MRI machines, CAT scans, these assets cost a lot of money. And if they're not being used well, either because of scheduling reasons or staffing reasons, then two bad things are happening. Patients are not getting access to care when they need it, or as quickly as they could. And hospitals are not being able to use these assets to generate revenue. And both of these are a lose-lose situation for the hospital and for the patient. So what we do is we use mathematical techniques to identify the best way to optimize scheduling and capacity to free up and unlock this capacity. One good analog might be the way transportation companies, package delivery companies, optimize the path of the airplanes, the capacity in their trucks and their drivers to be able to fulfill against the promise of being able to deliver packages, or what airlines end up doing by way of managing both schedules and staff to be able to guarantee going from point A to point B. So that's what we do. It's a huge problem in healthcare today.
That's obviously a big problem for healthcare, especially in terms of financial challenges. Most hospitals are facing some pretty significant financial headwinds. So if you can unlock some of that capacity, if you can maybe schedule another procedure or two in a given week, that obviously would seem to make a pretty big difference to a system's bottom line.
Absolutely. And what we've seen is if you take, say, the perioperative space, we've been able to, on average, unlock so much capacity that hospitals are able to do 6 to 15% more cases during prime time when they are staffed. And I cannot underline or underscore the importance of staffing enough. As you know, that's one of the biggest issues. So how do we leverage or utilize the staff we have to be able to do as much as we can without burning them out? And that's become as big a problem as the capacity itself. So on the periop side, imagine being able to add 8 or 10% more volume of cases with the same number of staff and the same number of rooms. It's hugely beneficial to the bottom line. Even more so from a patient perspective, not having to wait months to get their surgery done, not having to wait a long time on the day of surgery is huge because we can take care of our patients and provide access. And finally, from a cost structure perspective, if you're able to do more with the same cost, your unit cost of service also goes down. So from a hospital's perspective, it's an access and revenue advantage. It's also a utilization and cost advantage.
Now, the perioperative services, that's a relatively newer venture for LeanTOS, is that correct?
Well, so we launched a new service within perioperative transformation. We actually work with about 5,000 ORs in this country across almost 90 hospitals or health systems, about 300 hospitals. What we were providing, we still provide a suite of tools that are the most comprehensive in the industry to unlock capacity, get surgeons to release time sooner, allocate the right block to the right individual, provide forward-looking guidance in terms of the cases that are likely to be done in the future so staffing can be accommodated. What we recently launched, to your point, is a new service that sits on top of everything we've done so far. We call it perioperative transformation as a service. After having worked with all the systems we work with, what we realized was, in addition to the tools and the workflow automation, what's really critically missing in healthcare amongst folks that are partnering with health systems is providing these health systems almost a guarantee that the outcomes that they're looking for will be achieved. And the reason we can do that is because of our breadth of experience, having worked with thousands of ORs across 40 states in this country. We've seen almost every corner case and edge case there can be of how people schedule, how they use their robots, how time is blocked, how time is released or not released, how time is requested. And so our staff can almost act like consultants to be able to bring change. So there's this magic formula that we talk about, Ron, that you'll get a kick out of, which says world-class artificial intelligence plus workflow automation plus transformation services, change management services, equals growth, ROI, and what we call systemness, the ability to work like a uniform system. And so any one of these three legs of the stool, if it's missing, you won't be able to unlock capacity, because I can throw the best navigation system in a car at people, but if they don't use it, or they don't know how, or they're afraid, or they don't like technology, they'd much rather be using paper maps, that navigation system is useless. So you need to embed the artificial intelligence into the natural workflow of day-to-day end users, and then you need to give them a reason to change. None of us like to change the way we do things. So giving them a compelling reason for why their lives will be better, patient lives will be better. They'll be able to obviously generate more revenue from a hospital perspective. But the key here is that frontline staff, schedulers, nurses, case managers, social workers, all of them should see a win-win, right? And I'll give you a couple of analogies to make this real. If you think about what the front desk person at Delta Airlines does today versus what they used to do 20 years ago, they don't do the commodity act of giving you a boarding pass or checking your bags in. You do that for yourself, right? They get far fewer people showing up even at these desks. And when they do, they're solving a slightly more complicated strategic problem, like I forgot my license or I need to rebook my ticket. So the nature of these jobs gets far more interesting, frankly, than commodity jobs. If you think how your FedEx delivery person or the UPS delivery person was delivering packages 20 years ago, everything was manual. Now, they show up, drop a package on your mobile phone. You get notified your package was dropped. There was a picture attached to it saying it was dropped outside on the couch you left or by your doorstep. These are fundamental transformations that will make throughput a lot better. Fundamental transformations only happen, though, when that FedEx delivery person and the person at the front desk at Delta knows that this is really high value add for them, and they're convinced that they want to use these tools. And that's why transformation as a service is so powerful, because throwing tools or automation over the wall just won't work, especially in healthcare that has been underinvested in from a technology perspective. And the technology that exists, not all of it is loved by people. They think a lot of it actually causes burnout. There is almost an aversion to doing more of what they've been doing.
Well, there's obviously a lot of exciting things happening with your company, and we need to talk about Hospital IQ, the company you just acquired a few months back. Can you talk about that acquisition and what that's going to do for LeanTOS?
Yeah. We found that in our vision and our mission to automate and make more aspects of a health system efficient, we started looking at adjacent companies to us that had solved complementary problems. And in the case of Hospital IQ, they had several things that we really liked. One was they have an inpatient solution that we felt was very strong. So when a patient ends up from the emergency department or from an operating room into an inpatient bed, one of the big problems hospitals face is that discharging the right patient from the right unit is difficult at times to make way for this new incoming traffic. So smoothing inpatient flow was one of the big drivers for why we made that acquisition, because Hospital IQ has a very strong set of tools, capabilities, and personnel that can provide inpatient transformation as a service, if you will, right? The second reason we acquired them was their marketing and sales process. In that process, they had built some really strong partnerships with Siemens and with Cerner in particular. So as large companies that could be very strong partners for us, both from a product perspective and a distribution perspective, that was a big part of the acquisition as well. And overall, the level of alignment between their team and ours in what we want to achieve and how we want to change healthcare for the better was really the big reason for the chemistry between the companies. So those were the top three reasons, and we closed that acquisition in January. It's been very successful. We've adopted our perioperative solution and their inpatient solution, so it's sort of like the best of both worlds for customers. And we've been able to now work with, forge a partnership with Siemens, which has now come under the LeanTAS name. So all of these are pretty good developments for us.
Can you talk a little bit about the Siemens partnership? Because that seems pretty interesting.
Absolutely. So if you think about Siemens as a global company that has a lot going for them, of course, but also for us, they have a massive footprint. Practically every hospital in this country uses some piece of Siemens equipment in radiology and imaging, radiation oncology, and other spaces. So their access to decision makers, their access to people who understand the nature of the operational problems we solve is pretty high. Siemens itself is also global. So someday, if we aspire to take our solutions globally, they could be a very strong partner for us. And so jointly, we share this vision of operational efficiency being a requirement. It's no longer a luxury for some hospitals to have it. So already we're seeing a significant movement in the relationships that Siemens builds. One of the things that Siemens does is they enter into these value-based partnerships. What that means is that they commit to a certain degree of cost savings and a certain degree of margin improvement for hospitals. And so these are large numbers. It could be hundreds of millions of dollars. So a classic example is the Medical University of South Carolina, which is a common customer of ours and one that came in through our Siemens relationship. And the reason was that Siemens entered into this value-based partnership contract. And part of that contract were our services as being one quiver in the, one arrow in the quiver that Siemens was bringing to MUSC. And there are dozens of such partnerships Siemens does. And so it's a win-win. We're able to provide a service that helps them fulfill their obligation. And they bring us to the C-suite and the many of these large institutions.
I wanted to go back to something you said in terms of the incorporation of technology in the hospitals and the healthcare industry. Sometimes it's been chided for being slow to adopt technologies. And also you reference yourself, some of the technologies you have adopted haven't really succeeded in reducing some of the stress on their staff. Do you see any difference in the way hospitals and health systems are approaching technology now, maybe in the last couple of years, either strategically or even by necessity because of staffing shortages that everybody's grappling with?
I do. And some of the reasons are exactly what you said. I mean, if you think about the big drivers, one is definitely COVID brought to the forefront the importance of capacity management. Right. It was always a problem. But when you had as many patients as needed beds, for example, or you had to close off elective surgery for a while, which is the economic backbone of a hospital, the importance of maximizing and utilizing your assets well became kind of obvious. And not being able to do it by hand is also became obvious that you cannot scale things without automation and without some degree of artificial intelligence. So that's one big driver. Another big driver is indeed the staffing shortage. You could have 10 operating rooms, but if you can only staff 7 of them, how are you going to ensure that you can maximize throughput and case volume? Again, trying to do it by hand and build a schedule every day by hand and try and optimize the game of Tetris every minute of the day is just not scalable. It's not something if your scheduler for some reason is sick or cannot come into the OR, or into the hospital, business can come to a stop. So you need more technology. There are two other reasons that I'll point to. I think the life of hospital personnel themselves outside of the hospital is now so much easier than it ever was. No one calls a travel agent to make a travel booking. No one calls a restaurant to make a restaurant booking. People do self-service communication of all sorts on their mobile devices. So the expectation and the realization that this is possible, I'm not just stuck in the client server world with a bad UX trying to type 1,000 things. That's not what today's technology can do. You can get far easier tools that make your life simpler. And the final, probably the biggest driver is all industries that changed, be it banking, be it retail, be it airlines, be it transportation, changed because of a big economic stick, right? When Amazon came in and said, you have no choice but to be efficient, Macy's. When the airlines found that they were losing money hand over fist and the only ones that were making money were the ones like Southwest who were highly efficient. When price competition among the UPSs and the FedExes led to the point that they had to get more efficient. Now for hospitals, it is a matter of survival. I believe hospitals are facing in 2023 the 1999 moment that airlines faced, where you've got to become operationally excellent or you either will get acquired or worse, you might not survive. And so here's an industry that is 19% of GDP. And the portion of technology spend amongst the pie of total technology spend is 5%. Ron, when I heard this stat, it blew my mind. And then I said to myself, I understand why hospitals are so far behind because they're so underinvested in what is the key driver of competitiveness in every other industry. The Amazons, the Googles, the Microsofts, all these other industries I talked about, their core competence is really moving information. And if you think about what healthcare is, at the heart of healthcare is moving information and interpreting information and using that information to diagnose something or to provide a cure or some sort of medication. And those are areas that hospitals are woefully underinvested in. So that's changing, thankfully.
You mentioned before in an interview where we talked about data and how health, the business of healthcare is really not just caring for patients, but really understanding and taking advantage of data. I just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that because it's a really interesting concept.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is true of any highly logistically challenging industry, where if you take the clinical operations in a hospital and the operational operations in a hospital, even if we separate those two for a second, on the clinical side, you know, if I have a machine that can diagnose with 95% certainty if a particular image is benign or malignant, then that machine has the ability to process billions of images to be able to provide a recommendation that is likely to be quite well thought through relative to any individual human being who may through their lifetime only be able to process a few thousand images, right? And at the end of the day, if you think about judgment, clinical judgment, it's based on intuition, knowledge, and experience. So being able to get help from an artificial intelligence tool, an AI like reading a CAT scan or reading an MRI, can go a long ways in at least short-circuiting the decision-making process. I'm not talking about removing the doctor from the process. I'm just saying the amount of time it takes to get to a positive conclusion or a good conclusion can be shortened a lot, as one example. Or if I think about, there have been a couple of interesting case studies that have been, you know, University of Maryland about a month ago showed they took a large language model like ChatGPT, which is not trained on medical data per se. It's trained on a lot of other data. And they had fed into it the symptoms of 25 individuals, and they asked ChatGPT to respond. And this language model came back and said and got 22 of those 25 right. Now, I wouldn't trust a machine that doesn't get 24 or 25 of the 25 right. But now imagine being able to send those recommendations to a clinically trained person, taking away a lot of the front end load from the system, right? Let's move to a couple of, and so if you think about your question, what is the business of providing healthcare? On the clinical side, it is generating, interpreting, and using data and information to make a decision to heal a patient. And historically, all of this has had to be done by hand or by human beings, and a large part of it can now be assisted with artificial intelligence. On the operational side, if you think about bed management, we talked about the OR earlier. If we think about bed management, navigation systems are able to tell you how long it's going to take to get from point A to point B on any given day in any city in the world at any hour of the day. Those kinds of algorithms, if applied to bed movement, can predict things like the likelihood of how many beds are going to be needed per unit by hour of day, by day of week, because of the expected ingress and egress of patients is very high. Then if you think about recommendation algorithms like the Amazons and the Netflixes who are telling you what you should buy and what movies you should watch, very similar to that, by clustering the right types of patients, you can look at existing patients in beds and come up with a far more accurate understanding of what their expected dates of discharge might be. You combine these two pieces of logic, you suddenly have a navigation system for your health system, where we can provide nurses and frontline staff a lot more accurate guidance, instead of every morning waking up to a C-suite member saying, thou shalt discharge everybody before noon. Now it can be, thou shalt discharge everybody before noon. And let me tell you, I'm going to give you help. Which ones should you discharge first and then next? So how do you use your limited EVS and limited transportation staff well? That is the piece that's missing. Because in a world where we just make these decrees without actually providing any guidance for our staff, it becomes Groundhog Day every day, again and again. Instead, if you think about what I just told you, it is really the movement of information. If you think about taking historical information on which unit had what bed census and who came and when, and applying that much like Google applies it for Google Maps and Waze, the operational business of healthcare is also about using data and move information. It's really not about anything more than that, if you think about it.
So what advice would you offer health systems and hospital leaders that are dealing with some pretty substantial headwinds as they move forward?
Yeah. You know, and it's a tricky situation because financially, it's a hard time for hospitals. And I would say, look at analogous industries. Look at what airlines did in the late 90s. Despite economic headwinds, they invested in tools for the future. Massive supercomputers in the sky that could predict volume of traffic between point A and point B and help them price minute by minute. So today, if I go onto delta.com and I try and book a ticket, Delta knows for the leg of the flight that I'm trying to book, what the number of travelers expected to have booked flights by that time is. And if it's too high, they raise prices because demand is high. If it's too low, they lower prices to attract me to fill the plane. These sorts of technologies are an investment in the short term. And the good news is that now with software as a service models, they're not big investments, but they're very powerful investments. One of the problems, I think, in healthcare has also been the nature and size of investments people have had to make. I need to invest in an EHR. I need to spend $100 million. Boy, that's going to break the bank. What's my ROI on that? Well, I'm not sure. If you look at tools that are actually optimizing capacity or helping your physicians make better decisions or reducing burnout, the ROI is not just obvious. It can be achieved a lot sooner because these tools are now cloud-based. They're provided as a service that you can turn on and off, much like you would your Netflix subscription. So the advice I would give is, one, be open to new ways of doing things. Be open to expertise from many analogous industries that can be applied to yours. Be aware of your sacred cows. I use this term loosely, but I'm allowed to because of my name and the way I look. You know, I grew up in a country where it's not as if we didn't have trucks and cars that could go at 70 miles an hour, but none of us did. Why? Because in the middle of the road, there was an animal or another car or a cow blocking the road. And we had all these sacred cows, and we still do. And frankly, so do hospitals. And amongst those sacred cows, things like, oh, I only need my EHR. I can build this all myself. That's sort of like GM saying, I need to write Microsoft Word just because I can afford to. Is that really your core competence, GM, or partnering with someone to help you do that? And others have built these tools. So I would say in a world where you're trying to get your economics better, the good news is many of these technology investments have very quick time to value. They have quick payback. Folks like us are willing to partner in a risk-free way where the entire risk is assumed by us. Hospitals, though, need to be ready to know that, you know, this is a term that I'm not using, so I hope no one's offended by it. Aaron Meary, who is a close friend, and he's the Chief Information and Development Officer of Baptist Jacksonville, went on record recently and said, we realized that our system and technology was built for the 1980s, not for 2023. That realization is something that every C-suite in this country needs to be talking about. If you want to survive this period of drastic change, I think you need to not just embrace technology, but try and get ahead of the curve and at least come to the point where 2023 is, not where the 1980s were.
Well, I know we're rapidly getting close to the end of our window here. I just wanted to ask what you're most excited about going forward for LeanTOS in light of some of these developments you've been talking about.
Oh, you know, we a lot of us wake up every morning like kids in a candy store, because everywhere you look, the advancements in the technology, the level of partnerships we have, the need for drastic transformation of healthcare is right around us. And, you know, we're really fortunate to work for mission and money. I'm not claiming I'm Mother Teresa. The economics and the act of making money as a venture-backed business is just a reality. That being said, working on a problem that really matters. Look, I'll make this personal. I'm 53. I'm South Asian. I have back issues. I have knee issues. Just my genetics are one that lend themselves to diabetes. So I know that I'll be one of the biggest users of the health system going forward in the next 30 years. So whether it's for me or my kids or you or your kids or your family or anybody else, this problem of access needs to be solved. And what I am most excited about is that it can be solved. This idea that it takes 24 days to get a primary care appointment in the richest country in the world is ridiculous, right? Meanwhile, I can get a plane ticket in 10 seconds. And I can get pizza ordered and delivered to me in 30 minutes. How can that be, right? And so what's exciting for us is building more solutions, solving harder problems, connecting these problems together, taking them to market in a market that's hungry for these solutions, potentially even globally. So lots to wake up in the morning for. Thank you for asking that, Ron.
You bet. Well, I really enjoyed this conversation. It's great talking with you. And thanks so much for sharing what you're doing and some of the exciting things ahead for LeanTOS. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity, Ron. Great to see you again.
Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.